The Around the NFL Podcast is winning on and off the field.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, a giant room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Connor Orr, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
From the Media Center, Super Bowl Media Center in Phoenix.
Radio Row,
Around the NFL Podcast, on the road for Super Bowl 49. Guys, this is very important.
We almost started the podcast while Connor was still in the bathroom. We were in such a hurry.
That's not the best way to sell our...
Oh, yeah, Connor, remember. Not normally here. It's great to have you, you know.
I know, I'm here to permanently ruin the chemistry. The chemistry that you guys have so...
You're off to a great start. That's from hijinks. This is our first of three shows from Arizona. This is the only show we'll be doing from Radio Row, but there's a video podcast, so maybe it is not the only show. We're doing another podcast on Thursday, but it'll be all video. And Greg, do you have the details for that? Because I have none.
Well, first, it's Friday, right?
Oh, it's Friday. Okay, so we're really, you know,
we're taping. We got lots of planned games. There's going to be some softball pants involved, which I'm very excited about. It's going to be probably the biggest Around the NFL show ever. And yes, it's going up on Friday afternoon, which is a little different, but you know, you can watch it all weekend.
On NFL Now.
Maybe on Sunday on NFL Now before the Super Bowl. Maybe just instead of the Super Bowl.
It's going to be the best show ever.
Remember, last year at this time, we were operating in New York City out of a weapons closet.
Right.
So this is a massive upgrade for us in general.
The podcast is growing. People have come up to Mark Sessler especially.
I think we lost more fans than we gained. A podcast fan
really was yelling at Mark Sessler how much he loves the Quiet Storm, and Mark pretty much gave him like the hi-hat.
That is not fair at all.
Let me just set the stage. We were working down on the floor, and a gentleman from Canada, which is a country north of America, said, quiet storm, and Mark just shot up an icy glare. And
I said, totally Mark, not representing
Mark, that's, you know, that's a fan.
Well, what happened? Okay, well, number one, we are next to a wild swarm of Seahawks fans that were chanting. I had the headache of the decade, and all I heard was this person looking down on us. I thought he's trying to antagonize us and get us in some sort of a scuffle, and I'm not going there. But then I realized later that he was trying to get our attention, and we had a nice chat with him, and I've gone back and forth with him on Twitter multiple times to try to heal this.
This is what you call damage control in the industry. All right, so this is our show. We're gonna get into Media Day, which was an absolute zoo at the home arena. A lot of people say, oh, the home arena of the Phoenix Suns. I like to say the Phoenix Mercury, four-time WNBA champions. So we were there this morning for Media Day, which was insane, and we got a lot of stuff to get to. We're going to talk about the headlines. We haven't talked together in a while. It's been the longest we've gone between shows in over a year. So we're going to get into some headlines, what's going on in the league. We're going to talk more about deflated balls, which is fun.
Good.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about storylines that nobody's talking about, but they should be ahead of Sunday's game. Because everybody's talking about the same stuff, but this is where, Wes, you're the scientist, we bring a different perspective on the game of football.
It'd be nice to actually talk about what happens on the field.
That's what we plan to do. So let's start with Media Day. We'll talk about what happened before what's become known as the Sessler incident. This was the craziest, and Mark, you and I have done four of these together now. To me, moving it from a stadium into an arena wasn't that big a deal last year in Jersey. It felt like it was more condensed, but not too condensed. This year, with all this stuff going around the Patriots, I imagine led to a flood of additional credentials being handed out. This was a madhouse today.
Yeah, the main takeaway for me was the smells. You know, you just have people, large bodies just pressed against you, and like $20,000 equipment banging into your head as people are trying to, you know, and I'm not a giant guy. I'm an obvious target. These guys think we're going to move him out of the way and get our quote, and I don't like that behavior at all.
I don't like that either.
There were probably other things that happened in Media Day, too.
It's a bizarre combination of self-promoting bozos, like the guy in a barrel or the provocatively dressed
barrel guy had a big day today.
Acting like reporters. And then you have actual reporters who have, the manners of barnyard animals just muscling their way through because their story is more important than yours. So that's basically what Media Day is.
Did you learn anything important? Anything at all? Football-wise?
I think Chris Berman is my outlier this year.
Wes had a run-in with
last year. Outlier was a punk. Just pushes his way to the front, nudges everyone out of the way. Berman pulled the same thing today. He's more important than everyone else. And then he asked the most inane question.
Media Day is not a good day for Chris Wessling. It's just not a fit with his sensibilities. I guess, Greg, I'll toss it to you. What did you take away from the event that you're not as prickly about the event? I just was curious what you asked.
That Michael Bennett is a delightful...
Oh, he's great at this.
Fountain of insanity. Like, he is commit... Like, it seems like with most guys who are kind of like the wacky guy on the team that it's a bit...
It's contrived. Usually,
and
yeah.
I feel like he's naturally just insane because he's so committed to each... in every answer being from like planet Jupiter that I appreciate. Very entertaining.
My favorite line of the day when I asked him why we should expect Dan Quinn to be a successful head coach.
What'd he say?
And he said, I think it's because in big games he continues to drop his lower extremities.
Right. That's pretty much what you're looking for.
One thing that I took away was Russell Wilson. We know that he's very good at the Derek Jeter school of say nothing at all, but he seems like a guy that is a complete ease. I don't know if you guys got to stop by his podium at all, but he was very loose, very relaxed, and I guess maybe that's one thing you could look at with the Seahawks, that they're in such a better spot in terms of they, for the last 8 days now or whatever, have had no distractions. They have not dealt with any of that stuff that the Patriots are with the deflated ball stuff. I mean, did you sense at all, like, a difference between the teams and how they were reacting?
I almost felt like they needed it, though. Like, the Seahawks are, like, a team that needs to be bothered in order to thrive in some capacity.
So, I like it. Maybe they're getting soft.
Right?
Kind of like they were in the NFC Championship game, which people have conveniently forgotten they got, tossed around the field for 56 minutes. And the Patriots, maybe they're the ornery ones.
I think the Patriots, Monday's press conference, Monday night, was tension-packed, and it was a very weird setting. I think this was, I like to go over to where the assistant coaches are because it's less crowded.
You love assistant coaches.
I love them, and they...
You want to be an assistant coach.
It's their chance to talk, and I thought the most impressive guy for me today was Josh McDaniels, who in the past has been labeled as something of a disaster on various scales, and, he really was. He spoke for probably, 50 straight minutes.
Yeah.
Connor was over there, too. I mean, he just, nothing stopped him. And the coaches seem focused. If it's all, I think Kraft and Belichick have taken the major brunt of this, and Brady. But players and younger coaches, assistant coaches, did not seem to be off their game.
No.
And especially McDaniels, who was basically asked 30 times, do you remember how bad of a head coach you were?
Right.
And just gracefully just handled
it. Denver media, who came here, it's close by, Phoenix and Denver, and they have nothing else to do, really, other than talk to McDaniels.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, also, I think, like Mark said, yesterday got a lot of the bad vibes out of the way for the Patriots. And it did feel like today, after a week of talking about deflated balls, that we sort of turned a corner, and maybe there'll be other reports, but I felt like the Kraft and investigator Ted Wells and the Glazer report, which we'll talk about later, all that happening on Monday, that was kind of everyone trying to get the last word in before we switched to football for the rest of the week.
I think one thing the Patriots benefited from here was there was no big turn in the story immediately before media day started, and to me it felt like Belichick and the whole team got off the hook a little bit on what could have really been a feeding frenzy. You didn't hear about that afterwards. It was more, to me, a lot of the storylines were your typical storylines. Marshawn Lynch didn't talk again this time. He said the same thing 30 times and then walked off the podium. I went over, I talked to Gronk, and it was like, there wasn't no edge talking to Gronk because of this scandal going on. He was typical Gronk. He told me, by the way, Bobby Goons, his personal driver, he told me, this is around the NFL, exclusive. Told me that they're driving the Gronk party bus from Foxborough to Arizona. It's en route right now.
Dan Hansis exclusive.
Bobby Goons.
I will accept the Pulitzer at NFL Honors, by the way. For
I liked when someone asked or offered to Belichick to murder someone on behalf
of
the
what?
Team.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that was the third question, and Belichick said, I'm just focused on Seattle. Someone else said, Belichick, Katy Perry halftime show, what's your breakdown on the minstress trying to do something at halftime? Belichick, I'm just focused on Seattle. The guy is unflappable, would not
he
be
did,
taken
though,
out.
He did, flawlessly answer what his favorite Joe Pesci movie was, and it was both Home Alones.
Oh, one get out of here, Belichick.
And then Home he Alone. Said, my cousin Vinny was third, even though he
Home Alone 2 was awful retread. Home Alone 2 is Home Alone 1, but put in New York City.
Maybe that's, you know, a fond memory with Steve Belichick, his son. Maybe they watched that together.
Ooh, is that a little bit of a tease for the Mark Sessler? Talk about Pulitzers. He's going to drop a feature on Steve Belichick, Bill Belichick's son.
Well, good luck trying to get the Patriots to even describe what this assistant coach does. There would, no one would say a thing.
Well, he's a mysterious man.
Speaking of Pulitzer, Sessler taking some hotshot photos with his iPhone at Media Day, put him in black and white, threw him up on his Facebook page. People buzzing, both in his internal social media circle and on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, our photographer, Ben Liebenberg, I saw him sweating a little bit because he produced a photo of our group that had Dan's head fully obscured.
Yeah, I was like, you're a professional photographer, and you're chopping me out. What a jerk. Speaking of jerks, and I don't know if I'm speaking out of school here because I didn't have a lot of interaction, but I did hear from a certain around the league member that, around the NFL member, that Earl Thomas, Media Day's jerk.
Oof. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, every year you find some people that are pleasant surprises. I really thought Chandler Jones was an interesting, engaging guy to talk to.
He was.
There were a number of Seahawks as well. But Earl Thomas, he was kind of giving everyone the high hat. Kind of a jerk.
And you know who he took the title from? Last year's biggest jerk of the media day, Matt Prater.
Oh, yeah. That was a Dan-centric villain.
last year, they had in little pig pens the people that weren't as important, that didn't get risers, and they stuck all the special teams guys and other players that weren't stars. And Prater pretended to be on the cell phone whenever somebody tried to ask him a question with a big, giant diamond earring stud in his earlobe. And it's like, bro, kicker?
So many problems there.
Anyway.
He got his comeuppance.
He did get his comeuppance. Anything else from Media Day that we want to get to before we move on to the headlines?
One thing, last year I remember coming out of Media Day with a pretty clear idea of what Seattle's plan was against Peyton Manning, that they were really actually right out there saying, we're going to get to this guy, hit him early, and shake him up. I mean, we had written four stories on that front at this point. I didn't hear as specific a take on how to deal with the Patriots from Seattle.
They're not giving anything away this year.
Not this time.
Well, it's the same, isn't it?
Quick
pressure to them. One thing I did hear today on that front, and I'm not even remembering who it was right now, but one of the Seattle defenders talking about that they thought playing Rodgers was really good prep for Brady, especially Rodgers in his hobbled state, because the Packers were so focused on getting the ball out quickly, and that's what Brady does. And they talked about just really being on top of tempo, because they say Brady's very tough to predict when he's going to snap the ball, and that surprises defenders and keeps them behind. So I thought that was interesting that he thought that was the best possible preparation, was Rodgers, one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league, but sort of in a state where he was about as mobile as Brady.
Although McDaniels was touting the newly mobile Tom Brady today, so...
I think that's true. I went back. I'm serious. I went back.
Greg buys into Patriots narrative.
I'm going to do a piece later in the week, you know, how the Patriots win, how the Seahawks win. So I went back through my notebooks, one of Dan's favorite things of mine that I always have. So, you know,
it's like Charlie Day's chicken scratch at Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
So, there's like a sign of a chicken in there.
Yeah. So see if I can find any common themes when I looked at the different games. And a lot of it was like Tom Brady is making more plays with his feet this year. Plays kind of late in the down, as people say. You know, he's not Aaron Rodgers out there, but he was doing it.
The Broncos game that the Patriots blew
him
out.
Regular season.
Yeah, he was very. You could tell a big difference between him and Peyton Manning in that game.
One other thing McDaniel said was that having Darrelle Revis on the roster, they believe that that is a major benefit to deal with Richard Sherman, though, because they're such intense practice players and preparers and game film watchers that they think it's just helped the entire offense.
Well, another thing, now that we're still talking about Revis and the secondary and Browner, now a member of the Patriots, I liked how honest he was when they tried to bring up you know, the fact that he said he told his wide receivers, you know, take Sherman out, take his elbow out, take Earl Thomas out, injure him. He basically just said it. And normally a player is going to walk that back. But today Browner just said, that's part of the game. You have an injured ankle. I'm going to go for it. He's like, you have an injured knee. Like, we're going to dive at it. And I don't know. I like Brandon Browner on this team.
That reminds me of Brandon, what Damashek told me at the media day. And we really should move on to headlines, but it was so funny. Damashek always asks a great inane question to these players every year. Last year was asking players, do you think this is a must-win game?
Really. That's the greatest of all time.
This year he was asking, and I hope I'm not giving away his segment, but you know, what are you going to do? He was asking players, you know, who do you think wants this more? Who wants it more? Is this game going to come down to who wants it more? And he asked Brandon Browner that. Brandon Browner looked him up and down and said, I can't believe you work. They pay you at NFL Network.
I like your Browner impression more than your Sherman impression.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to the headlines. And we need to get, because as we've talked about, we've been out of the mix for a while. So let's talk about some of this Deflategate stuff. NFL gumshoe Ted Wells, Mark Sessler, back in the mix. He is handling the independent investigation of the deflated football scandal, with tying back to the AFC Championship game. So that's an ongoing thing. We got an update a few days ago from Wells saying they had spoken to 40 people inside the organization. Not Tom Brady, though.
He said, Ted Wells also said, though, don't read
NFL in, gumshoe Ted Wells.
Don't read into who they've talked to and when. Don't expect an answer anytime soon. Basically,
they're going to talk to everyone.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Anyways.
Yeah. So anyway, so then Bob Kraft, who after initially wasn't really in frame on this story, has popped up now the last couple of days. And he had a press conference in which he said, and here's a quote, and Greg, you just listen in because this is your boy. If the Wells investigation is not able to definitely determine that our organization tampered with the air pressure of the footballs, I would expect and hope the league would apologize to our entire team, and in particular to Coach Belichick and Tom Brady, for what they had to, here's a key word, endure this last week. This is a big story, Greg.
I wasn't that into this story on any level. Initially, I thought, you know, it's making a mountain out of a molehill. I started to get into it a little more on Monday when the Glazer report came out that we'll talk about, and the Robert Kraft surprise press conference before Belichick, because it's pretty rare to see an NFL owner go out there and really challenge the league and say that he was disappointed in how the league and the media has handled something, and he expects an apology. And it does raise, like, the craziest conspiracy theory at all. What if the Patriots didn't do anything? And people think this is crazy to even imagine.
I'm crossing my fingers that Greg's going to cry like Brunel.
No, but just imagine. But they're coming from that perspective, and he's saying, imagine that these guys had to go through all this. And the Patriots are going to use it as fuel, right?
I think they will. Unless they find a smoking gun, Kraft's not going to live to regret that.
Well,
he's not going to get any apologies.
To that note, Jay Glazer of Fox Sports reported Monday that the league's investigation has zeroed in on a Patriots locker room attendant who was seen on surveillance video taking the footballs from an official's locker room into another room at Gillette Stadium before bringing them out to the field prior to the kickoff. And we got some more details from another source, too, right, about what room it was.
Right. I mean, there's been reports. It was on Pro Football Talk about that they took it into the bathroom. And
naughty.
It goes on and on. But I think it's a story that we're not going to learn too much more the rest of the week. Unless someone, you know, drops a big bomb on Sunday morning. That would be something.
How about Belichick suspended Sunday morning for this Super Bowl and every Super Bowl in the future?
Well, I was at the park with my daughter on Saturday.
Explain a brag.
When how was that a brag? When Belichick suddenly, they called the surprise Patriots press conference out of nowhere, and that was the Belichick one where he just went on a rant and people loved it. And I thought at that point anything's possible. Didn't you guys, when you heard that, it's like, what is this press conference going to be? Like, he cops to it, Brady's suspended, I don't know. It just feels like anything's on the table with this.
It had the feeling of a self-imposed, like, suspension. Like, that first 5 minutes was one big hanging clause where I expected him to be like, and that's why I'm no longer going to be the head coach of the New England Patriots. And then all of a sudden, it was just a really long, boring...
I resign as HC of NEP.
I didn't realize that press conference existed.
Wes, clearly not plugged into the NFL world.
It just seemed like the Patriots were one wave after another trying to say, this is the last time this will be spoken about. But Kraft, though, it was, I thought it was a masterstroke. I mean, because he came out and shielded, essentially, I think, Belichick from having to take all that heat. I mean, it is a distraction, I think, if you've got to keep answering these questions. It's not easy for New England in a huge game.
What about I think Belichick also thinks, what's the best for the team? And for him, it's doing that press conference. And if nothing else, getting all those players fired up or feeling like someone's standing up for them and basically giving a big middle finger to the rest of the world.
What about the Marissa Tomei we mentioned, my cousin Vinny, earlier? How does it was one of the more surreal press conferences, the Belichick press conference on Saturday in recent NFL history.
And that includes today's where he wore flip-flops.
Yeah, that's good job by Bill, by the way. That's just like, that's almost like a middle finger to the entire process. But referencing a 23-year-old movie and Marissa Tomei's Mona Lisa Vito character, that was the point where watching the presser at my home with my son, my infant son, bouncing on my lap, take that, Greg, with your park stuff and your daughter. Let's just go
around. Are you taking shots at my daughter?
No. It's like you're trying to explain yourself as the greatest dad ever, and we're trying to do a football podcast.
I'm saying I had to leave it. I got a lot of heat on Twitter for saying I can't believe you left the park scene.
Okay. I have multiple children too, but I'm not explaining the Patriots, situation away with.
It's all
their
connected.
Presence.
Anyway, but that was the
Chris
moment.
And I had some important stuff going on too. All right, so
that's the point where I bet it went from like a weird, strange press conference to truly surreal. To the point where Marissa Tomei is then on the Rich Eisen podcast explaining that she believes that Bill was being honest. And then it spins into Super Bowl week madness, which, you know, just the way it is.
Belichick is clearly also behind the Kennedy assassination and a laundry list of other issues that have occurred to our history.
I mean, more Tomei, though, the better, right?
Yeah.
The more we can talk
absolutely.
About the wrestler, you know?
Love her.
There's probably an end point to her. I'd be fine with that stuff.
If you haven't seen Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, that's a gem.
Oh, yeah, that is a gem.
Check out that one. Grab the reins, Dan.
All right. Before we go, we want to go around the couch here and talk about the things that we're expecting to have, that people aren't talking about, but they should be, because this is where we step in our expertise in the game. And I'm looking at the great Connor Orr. He's going to get us going. What are people not talking about, but they should be?
The fact that New England hasn't really faced a mobile quarterback, especially not someone like Russell Wilson this season. I think Ryan Tannehill was the most prolific rushing quarterback they've faced all season. And now you're going to face a really judicious quarterback that handles and takes advantage of running lanes better than any quarterback in football, I think, right now. And I think that could be definitely a game changer.
Well, they also haven't played anyone that's really used the read option on them. Like, in theory, the Dolphins did sometimes in their season, but they didn't when they played the Patriots. And I think back to the NFC Championship game was, like, when the second they started using the read option a little more, that's when they started moving the ball. And that frightens me so much as a Patriots fan, that they'll just kind of go back to using that heavy. When they had their best offensive games in the 2012 playoffs, when they got knocked out, it was read option like crazy. I think that could give the Patriots a lot of problems.
Mark.
All right, quick, 2 points. Number one, Bill Belichick a little more handsome than I realized up close. I got right up to the front lines.
I don't buy into that, by the way.
This is just my opinion.
Because you mentioned it on our way down here, and it's like, yeah, he's masculine.
I think he's a little more handsome than I thought.
Okay, all right, go on.
I'm sticking to that. Number two, I'm looking for, what about New England's recent penchant for trickery? Ooh. Not a team that did a lot of that historically in terms of trick plays. They don't need to. They're up by 25 points in most games. But you got the Edelman pass against Baltimore. They're throwing, you know, they're throwing the ball to offensive tackles. They're lining up in crazy ways. And I thought that, you know, number one in the AFC Championship, look, the Colts knew, had to know some of that stuff was potentially coming, and they were disorganized and unprepared for it. That won't be the case with Seattle. So how does Seattle counter what New England brings on that front? A little bit of maybe some magic, some madness.
Well, today Michael Bennett said if they try to throw the ball to Nate Solder, Cam Chancellor is going to hit him into next week.
Right.
So good luck with that. Although I'd like to see someone try to hit Nate Solder into next week. That's a large individual.
He's a big dude.
6'7", 6'8".
Greg's a little concerned. I can feel it in the air in general.
I like the trick play idea.
No, we are not saying who we think is going to win the game until our final podcast before the game. And to be honest with you, even if I did know it, I wouldn't say it. But I don't know who I'm going to pick yet. This is a weird game to pick.
I have no idea who I'm going to pick.
Really? I don't want to give anything away, but I have an inkling of which way I'm leaning.
Chris Wessel.
This segment is what are people not talking about?
They should be.
I would say, you know, we talked about the Patriots haven't faced a running quarterback yet. Seahawks offense running game is dominant, one of the top three run offenses in NFL history. But what's being overlooked, the improvement of the Patriots run defense, which ranked 26th by Football Outsiders metrics at midseason and ranks second in the NFL since midseason in run defense.
Wow, really?
Yes.
That shocks me.
Well, you've got Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, and Chandler Jones, three of the best young linebackers in the NFL, and people really don't know those guys because they're only in their third, in Collins' second season. They're still young, and they're just below, all-pro status.
They are, but they're also starting a totally diminished Vince Wilfork, who had a terrible AFC championship, by the way, and not really a very good game against the Ravens. And then Silver Saliga. That is the least known starter in a Super Bowl in a little while.
He was a custodian when I was in high school.
I would think. And then I was watching the AFC. A lot of times, their defensive tackles right next to each other are Siliga and Alan Branch. And I'm thinking, this is interesting that these guys are going to be such big parts of a team trying to stop Marshawn Lynch.
All right. So you just drove all over my stat and basically don't believe it.
No, I don't know. Because when I'm worried about this game as a Patriots fan, that's the number one thing I'm worried about is the interior of that line. And Jamie Collins is a great player and Chandler Jones is a great player, but I don't think of them as Willie McGinnis or guys who are good at kind of setting the edge and really tough against the run. That's not really their
thing. Dan,
is it uncomfortable
when these two are arguing in a larger public setting like this?
I hate it because people are watching. Everyone's watching.
Connor's just tuning out like a kid who doesn't want to hear it.
They say statistics say you cross your leg when you become disinterested in a conversation. So
all
just
right,
a reflex.
Patriots have 11 defensive starters, and according to Greg, not one of them has tackled a running back all year.
Stop.
Okay. Cut it out. I'm looking out for the Seahawks pass rush because, Aaron Rodgers could not move in that game. And they got six hits on him. I think they did a little better near the end of the game, but there was a large stretch of that game where Rodgers was untouched. Sacked just once, again, a statue, getting one sack. Now, Seattle's defense isn't known for its ability to necessarily pile up sacks as a stat. I think Michael Bennett led the team with seven this year. But one thing I know, as a sad Jets fan, the way to get to Tom Brady is to rattle him, to hit him, to make him uncomfortable in the pocket, make him see shadows and ghosts, as Greg likes to point out, sometimes can happen to him. And if they don't do that and they have another bad job in terms of getting to the quarterback, Brady's going to have a big day. So people aren't talking about that, but you know what, Wes? They should be.
They should be.
Greg, final view.
I have so many things. I gotta pick one.
Yes.
Well, I was gonna go more on the Collins, Hightower, Chandler Jones trio, but that they're uniquely suited to stop Russell Wilson and keep them inside the keep him inside the pocket.
That's what I said.
All right, whatever. I thought you were talking about the running game. I'm saying more like running. Also switch it around the other way. One thing I'd like. As a Patriots fan, everyone looks at the Seattle run defense like it's so great. They haven't been quite the same since early in the year. Dave Damashek was talking about this earlier since Brandon Mebane left. And they've given up some good days on the ground. Eddie Lacy looked like the better running back in that game for three quarters last time. And I think the Patriots are going to run the ball a lot more than you would expect. I think Blunt's going to be a big factor. It wasn't just a fluke game. I think that was the game of his life, and he looks really good right now. And I think they'll stick with him. It's not like they're going to go switch to Jonas Gray or Shane Vereen. There you go.
That's pretty good. And this is a shorter pod today, so I apologize to people who thought they were going to get our typical 50 to 1 hour show. But you'll have a lot of juicy pod content the rest of the week. Starting with Friday and then Sunday night after the Super Bowl from the University of Phoenix Stadium. And Wes, just before we go, is your stomach prepared for the softball pants that will be consumed in 3 days?
We've got a few exercises that Mark and I have been doing in the hotel lobby the last couple of nights that have prepared my stomach for this.
Okay, that's good. So, yes, the big show on Friday will be on NFL Now. So make sure, if you're not familiar, our wonderful listeners, with the NFL Now, and I would hope you are by now, but if you're not, now's the time to get in. This will be our first video podcast. It's a big deal for us, and we're going to make sure it's a big show. The greatest show ever, actually, by any group of talent ever associated with the entertainment business.
I like it. Connor, use the bathroom, like, well before the show starts.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, so we will be back on Friday with that big show. Thank you very much for listening. This is Dan Hanza signing off for Connor Orr, which we need a nickname for him, the haunted one, Connor Orr.
The ghost.
The ghost. Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and TD in a truck somewhere. I miss you, and I want to be with you again, TD, sooner rather than later. Until Friday, thanks for listening.